This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, welcome. So the plan is that we'll have Mr. Hashem this week and next week to discuss in Yoni Pesach. There'll be ideas, hopefully overable ideas for Seder nights, and just ideas, the themes that will be useful and interesting and hopefully make for a much more meaningful Yom Tov. The first idea, I think I heard it from my friend some years ago. It's a very beautiful idea, and I think it's an important introduction. The Pasuk says a few times, but it starts off in Devarim Tes Zayin, for example, Shemar es Chodesh Ha'oviv. Guard the spring month. There's an emphasis on the fact that Pesach took place in Chodesh Aviv, in the month, in the spring month. Again, in Shmos Yud Gimel, we have the same thing. Why the emphasis on Chodesh Aviv? It's interesting. We know all the details of when we came out, how we came out, what we ate when we came out. We know all the details. So why does the Torah tell us Kippur Chodesh Aviv? We know exactly the time and the dates and all the details. Why does the Torah emphasize Chodesh Aviv repeatedly? Rashi tells us the following answer. This is Rashi in Shmos. Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Dalet. Chodesh Aviv says Rashi, V'chiloh yoyodin ba'ezeh chodesh. Don't we know which month it was? What time of year it was? Elakach Amelohem. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Klal Yisrael. Ru'u chesed shogomachem. Look at the chesed which HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed with you. Shehoitzi eschem. He took you out. B'chodesh shekoshalotzeis. In a month which is kosher, which is auspicious, which is appropriate to go out in. Lo'i chamo, not too hot. V'lo'i tzino, not too cold. V'lo'i geshomim, not rainy. Spring is beautiful weather. Certainly in the Middle East, you go to Israel now, it's very beautiful weather. It's not too hot, not too cold, not too rainy. It's perfect weather. But that's how Rashi explains the emphasis on Chodesh Aviv. The difficulty is this. Imagine the following scenario. You get a guy who has been locked away. He's been imprisoned, perhaps solitary confinement for many, many years. Picture Nelson Mandela locked away there for all those years. But imagine there's a breakout. That's one night, the fellow who's been in prison for many years, he's sitting in his cell, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and he hears sort of a tapping at the floor of his cell. And it's getting louder and louder, until eventually there's a little pickaxe that sort of emerges through, and he doesn't want to make of it. And then it's sort of a little hole and it gets bigger, and then eventually a little head pops up and says, "We're here to take you away. We're here to save you." So, he's been locked away. Life is not very bright at the moment. He'll go for it. And he goes down into this tunnel, but a tunnel has been bored out that's, 50 meters, taking him beyond the perimeter wall. And there he is on his hands and knees, crawling out. And he goes out through the tunnel and he emerges through the other side. And imagine if he's going through the other side, he eventually goes through, he sees the prison beyond the perimeter wall, and he just runs. The guy says to him, just keep on going through the forest, straight, 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 all the way, and in a couple of hours' time, there'll be someone to meet you, in a black car, etc., etc. And the guy just runs. And he's feeling euphoric. He's feeling, the feeling of freedom is indescribable. Do you think he cares what the weather's like? Do you care if it's too hot, too cold, rainy? The overwhelming experience right now is that of euphoric freedom. He doesn't care what the weather's like. So who cares that it's Chodesh Aviv? The Rashi tells us it's a Chodesh, which is Lechama, Vleitzina, Vleitzshamim, not too hot, not too cold. It seems inconsequential, irrelevant. So the answer is this. Imagine, and this is something I just literally came from teaching a chassan, so imagine, I haven't yet had my shalom bashmuz with him, but imagine I sit there with him and I'm talking about the differences between men and women in life. And, you know, you're sitting there and you talk about giving a gift to a lady. So I'll say to him, it's very important to make sure that on your anniversary, on a birthday, that you buy a gift. Fine. So he goes to the store. He's a good guy. He goes, very conscientious. He diarizes it. He goes to the store, you know, a few days before her birthday, and he's going to buy her a necklace. So he goes and chooses, puts it in a box, and he doesn't want to take it home because he wants it to be a surprise. They're going out for dinner that night. So he's going to hide it. Where's he going to put it? He keeps it in the boot of his car. It's a good hiding place. So he puts it in the boot of his car. He decides to put it in a Tesco bag, in just a plain, cheap grocery bag, so that it's safe there. They go out that evening, and he's sitting there with his wife, and then at some point in the meal, he says to her, "I bought you a present." She's very excited, and sort of goes into his pocket, and he pulls out this Tesco bag. And she's thinking, like, what has he got me? Like an apple? What is this? So he rumples it out, crunches it up, you know, and he takes it out. And there's a box, and he opens it up, and sure enough, there's a lovely necklace. Now, it's very sweet, and it's very nice, and I'm sure she's very appreciative, but he's killed it. Because what should he have done? He should have gift-wrapped it, and put a nice ribbon on it, and as I always tell my chassanim, more important than the flowers you buy on Shabbos is the note that goes with it. So make sure that you write the nice note. Now, why does the guy not quite get this? Because he may have spent who knows how much on the necklace, whatever, yeah, £50, £100, £1,000, who knows what, and the ribbon and the gift wrap cost £2. So he's thinking, well, what's the point? And she's going to rip it open anyway. That's the way guys think. Yeah. So the point is that why is it important? Why is he wrong? Why is it important for her? The point is, because he gives strap it, he is telling her that he cares. This is important for him, and the message is all important. That's the point. The point over here is that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out B'Chodesh Aviv, of course the overriding gift was HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out. We're now emerging as a people. We now become Klal Yisrael. And that's the overriding feeling, if you like. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is gift wrapping that gift. He's putting a little ribbon on, he's putting fancy paper, and he's saying, Ru chesed shegomalchem. Look at this amazing chesed. He's taking you out in a month which is not too hot, not too cold, not too rainy. That's the gift wrap. And therefore, I mention this because Pesach, in particular, is a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's a gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is showing his tremendous love for Klal Yisrael. At this time of the year, we sort of, Purim is now, you know, a distant memory, and we're in the run-up to Pesach. The tension mounts a little bit. Later, you know, I said to Osher Chaim Levine, should we have the shiur next week and the week after? Two-part series, how should we do it? He said, you can't have it the week before. Whoa, no way. Right? This week and next week. Fine, I get that. But the point is not to lose perspective. That really Yom Tov is one of the greatest gifts of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Pesach in particular. That is the message of Chodesh Aviv. It should be a gift. It should be something which we cherish and a feeling, an opportunity of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he's giving us this gift of presence. And just as a sort of an idea which, you know, which Rabbanim emphasized, that there is a mitzvah on Yom Tov, in addition to everything else, there is a mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov. And to actually enjoy Yom Tov, I think they say in the name of the Vilna Gaon, that he found this very hard. How do you sort of just become happy? How do you, you know... So the Rambam says, there's a famous Rambam, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. The Rambam says, this is Lashon Hilchos Yom Tov, Perek Vov, Halach Yud Zayin, Chayev Adam Li Yos Bohen Sameach V'Tov Levov, V'Tov Lev. A person is M'chuyev, to be happy, and in good spirit. Hu Ubonov V'Ishtay, him, his wife, his children, V'Nei Beisayim, V'Kol HaNilvim Olav, and anyone who is sort of relying on him, Shenema V'Samachta B'Chagecho. Ketzad, how do you do it? So we're told, black and white. Haktanim You give them nash. In those days they would give nuts and things. Now I suppose with all the allergies, you stick to sweets. They prefer it anyway. You buy a new dress, jewelry. And for us guys, it's meat and wine. So, the point is that Chodesh Aviv is an idea, is an introduction to the, as we discuss in Yonim, for Yom Tov, that it's a gift. It's a gift, and it's, of course, there is a stressful and there's a lot to do, but not to lose that perspective. Okay, let's move on to the next idea. We're going to have four ideas. This is going to take the majority of the shiur, I think. It's nothing more than a Ramban in Chumash. And we're going to just go through a Ramban. But in my eyes, it's majestic. It's probably the most famous Ramban in Chumash. It's the famous Ramban at the end of Parshas Bo. And I do it often with the boys in school, go through it, and you know, this time of year, because it teaches you Yesodos and Emunah. And often, you know, if the purpose of this year is to give ideas to discuss at Seder night, I think this is a beautiful idea to discuss, because it touches on so many ideas of Hashkofa, and it's something, it's, you know, really, what is the tachlis of Seder night? Seder night is to impart traditional core values of what we stand for, and to imbue emunah to those who are with us at the table and to the next generation. And understanding of this Ramban, I think, is very powerful to present this material at some point over Yom Tov. So, let's take a look. Says the Ramban, it's Shmos Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Tes Zayin. We'll go through it together. You've got the text in front of you. Va'ata, it's not the full quote of the Ramban, but it's a big chunk of it. Va'ata omer lecha klal b'tam mitzvos rabbos. I'm now going to tell you a klal, a general rule, b'tam, regarding the reasoning of mitzvos rabbos, of many mitzvos. Hine, me'eis heyos ovdei gutle ba'olam. Since the time there was idolatry in the world, mimei enosh, from the times of enosh onwards, hecholo hadeos lehishtabesh be'emunah. People started making mistakes in emunah. In other words, as the Rambam said in the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, in the original, when Adam Rishon was created, there was no doubts in emunah. He spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There was no room for error. And only later, in just a very short while, a few generations later, slowly, as the Rambam describes, how they started getting into Avodah Zarah. So as the Ramban says now, Heicholu hadeis lishtabesh b'emunah. They started making mistakes in emunah. Mehem koifrim be'ikah. There are those who denied the ikah, the main thing. Va'omrim ki ha'olam kadmin. That chas v'shalom, that the world preceded HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Koch shu b'Hashem. They denied HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'yomru lohu, he didn't create the world. Umehem makchishim b'yediyose ha'protis. They said no. There is a Ribbono Shel, there is a God, but they denied yediyose ha'protis, his knowledge of what's going on in this world. V'omru, and they said, eicha yodakel v'yeshter be'elyon. How can God know what's going on down there in the world? Umehem, and another group of people, sheyoydu b'yediyah makchishim b'hashkocha. They said, okay, he knows what's going on, but he just is not involved in the world. They deny Hashgacha Pratis. V'yasu Adam kedage hayom shelo yashkiach hakel bohem. It's like, you know, we go on a ship and there's a water, and we know there are fish down there, but I don't know what goes on down there. I'm not involved in their lives. V'ein imahem oynish eschad. Nothing goes on. There's no oynish, there's no eschad. Yom rozov Hashem esoritz. He's abandoned the land. Now, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, either nationally or individually, he does some miracle by deviating from the normal natural way that the world operates, that automatically negates these philosophers. Ki ha-moifes ha-niflo. Because in a miraculous wonder from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Meire Sheyesh La'olam Eloyam U'mechadshei, that testifies that there is a God who has created this world. V'yodea U'mashkiach V'yochol. And he knows, and he intervenes, is involved, there's divine providence, V'yochol, and he's able. V'kasheyi ha-mofes ahu nigzar techila. And when that mofes was forewarned, Mipinovi, through the mouth of a Novi, Yizbare Mimenu Oida Mitasanavua, it becomes even clearer. Ki Yidabe Holikim Esa Adam, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to man, v'yigale soy de lavod v'nevim, he reveals his secrets to his nevim and his servants, v'tiskayim zeh ha'tera kulo. And therefore that perpetuates, that substantiates, authenticates Torah. V'lochein, third paragraph, yoma ha'kosav v'mofsim, therefore when it comes to the makas and all the mofsim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, the Pasuk says, ki ani Hashem b'keref ha'aretz, l'hoiros al ha'shkocha, to teach that HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervenes in this world. He doesn't just leave it to chance. V'oman, it says, L'man teda ki l'Hashem ha'aretz. That Hashem runs the world. L'heres al-achidosh. He creates the world. Ki'em she'loi she'bar me'ayin. He created them from nothing. V'oman, and furthermore it says, Ba'avur teda ki ein kameini b'chol ha'aretz. L'heres al-ayicholos. That he has the ability to control the world. She'hu shalit bakol. He controls everything. Ein ma'akev b'yodin. Nothing stops him. Because all of these different philosophies, the Mitzrayim either denied or they had doubts about. Therefore, the Makkas are Edim Nemonim, they're faithful witnesses to the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world and to the authenticity of the Torah. Now, therefore, says the Ramban, so why doesn't God just do this the whole time? Just make mofsim the whole time. Says the Ramban, but you can't do that in every generation. Next paragraph. Because you can't do this in every generation. For every Rasha, or every wicked person, or every person who denies him. Lemashal. Yeah? I mean, this actually is one of the real fundamentals of Hashkafa. You know, why is it that when we cross the old lady across the street and we help her with her shopping, why is it that a £20 note or a gold nugget doesn't just sort of float down to our feet? Why is it that every time we perhaps do an Avera, we speak Lashon Hara, we do something, that we're not sort of a bolt of lightning doesn't come out and, you know, a short, sharp electric shock? The teretz is,
there'll
be no choice. It'll take away our bechira. It will take away our Bechira. And Bechira is really an axiom of faith. It's a fundamental that that's how the world operates. The very fact that after tonight's shir, we can leave this room and we can do Ta'iv Eira, we can do something good, we can do something bad, it's our choice. That is the purpose of this world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu withdrew himself from this world. He doesn't. He set up in sort of mode nature. And therefore the world is us, we can make Bechira, we can make choices. That it's how we earn Olam Haba. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot, as it were, do this in every generation because it defeats the purpose. It's, otherwise, it would be too obvious for us. Therefore, says the Ramban, therefore, Yitzaveh, two lines from the bottom, Yitzaveh osonu shenaaseh tomid zichroin v'ayis lasheroinenu. So because he can't do it, as it were, in every generation, because it takes away from our Bechira, he therefore commanded us to remember this constantly, v'natik hadova elbonenu, to pass this down to our children, uvnehem livnehem, uvnehem ledarachrein. You know, a few years ago, I did something at the beginning of the Seder which was a bit unusual. I got the idea from my good friend Rabbi Malcolm Herman, Shavu Fushlema, and it worked excellently. And it's perhaps something you should think about doing. Before Yom Tov, I told my kids that they've got to make some paper men, paper chains. You know, you cut out, you say fold paper in a certain way, and you cut out and you make a chain of paper men. So you've got every, you know, sort of stick men holding each other's hands. And I said, I want 120 men all holding hands all the way. So they kept them busy for a few hours before Yom Tov and cutting out and stapling and sellotaping. And it was a few years ago, but it was a very special Seder night. All my siblings and my parents were all together. And Kleiner is a big room with a lot of people, and what I did was I got one of my kids or my niece and nephews to stand in one corner of the room and one stand in the other corner, and they held out this long chain. It was the beginning of the Seder, and I basically gave them a 3-minute overview of Jewish history. I said, you know, kids, there's only been 120 or so generations from Yetzias Mitzrayim, not that many. And I said, now this is Moshe Rabbeinu. And then, you know, you walk forward, and approximately this is David HaMelech. And this is the Tukul, this is the era, you know, just a quick overview of Jewish history. This is the time of the Mishnah, this is the era of Rabbi Akiva. And then this is the time of Rashi. And this is the time of the Shulchan Aruch of Yosef Cairo. And this is 3-4 generations ago. And kids, you remember when Opa used to come for Yom Tov, he's no longer alive. My wife's late grandfather. Yeah, we remember. So that's 4 generations. No, it's not that long. My daughter went to Poland a few weeks ago, and she sent a photo where we knew that her grandfather's Zayda's Zayda is buried in the Warsaw Cemetery. Now that's going back 8-9 generations. He's born in the early 1800s. So she stood by the kaver of someone who's 8 or 9 generations ago. Her Zayda's Zayda's Zayda. So 120 generations is not that long. When you put it, you know, in that context, and they see it in front of them, and they say, and that's the point. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for that one-off time, intervened with nature, and it was absolutely clear for anyone who was alive at the time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, and all these crazy hashgavas were driven away, and Klal Yisrael saw it in black and white. But he can't do that every generation, because otherwise there'll be no Bechira. The £20 note comes down when we want to cross the old lady across the street. Who wouldn't do it? Who would speak Lashon Hara if we get zapped every time? So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, I'm not going to intervene, but what I am going to do is put a lot of emphasis on that one big occasion, that one generation where we did do it. And what am I going to do? You've got to make sure that you get together and you repeat and you tell the story. Say the night, you tell the story. That's exactly what we do. We go through the makas, we go through the shibud, the background, the story, Kriyas Yamsuf, Matan Torah. We tell the story. And then that's really the purpose of the night. To tell the national story. It carries on the Ramban. That's why the Torah is so strict when it comes to Pesach. Kores is the most serious aver einish that we have. I always tell the boys, talk in their parlance. Yeah, it's Champions League Avera. A Champions League Einish. It's a person eats chometz on Pesach, a little biscuit, he gets kores. The same as eating on Yom Kippur, the same as forbidden relationships. Bazivas HaPesach, leaving over the Korban Pesach. Also, v'hitzrich shenichtev kol mashner eleinu bo'eis sumovsim al yodeinu v'al beineinu. That every man, when he puts on tefillin in the morning, he's basically strapping this story to his arm and to his head to remind him of the story. He shouldn't forget it. You walk in through a door, you see a mezuzah on the door. Again, a reminder. Every time you walk into a house, a reminder that HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervened. And do you remember that generation? That one-off time in Jewish history where HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervened. You know what it's like when you're walking in the dark nights, you know, when you go out to the countryside. Here in the residential area, at the night time, it's all very bright. But you go in the middle of a forest, and you go in a countryside, and it's night time. That's impressive. That's night time. You see the stars, and imagine you go on a hike, and the hike takes a bit longer, and you go into night time, and it's dark, and you can't see anything. I've done that. I've been there. And it's black. And all of a sudden, let's say you're in a storm, and there's a bolt of lightning, and suddenly the sky and everything is illuminated, and you can see the path ahead of you. But you only got it for 2.5 seconds, because when the lightning recedes, it's black again. So, but that bolt of lightning has illuminated. You now know which direction to go in. Well, that's the point. That generation was the bolt of lightning that reminds us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. And it's that story that we have to tell every generation. We have to have the constant reminders. Tefillin, mezuzahs. We have to remind ourselves every morning and every evening about Yetzias Mitzrayim. Remembering Mitzrayim is a mitzvah min HaTorah every morning, every night. You look at the Art Scroll Siddur, in the third paragraph of the Shema, it will say, when it says, Ani Hashem Elokeich Mashehu Tseisi Eschem Me'eretz Mitzrayim, have in mind to be Mekayim in the mitzvah, Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. That is a mitzvah min HaTorah. Once in the morning, once at night. Mimashekosov Leman Tisku Yetzias Mitzrayim Me'eretz Mitzrayim Kolim Mechayecho. V'shenase Sukkah B'chol Shana. That we make a sukkah every year. Again, part of this. V'chein kol kiyetz b'hen mitzvahs rabbis. Last paragraph. And so too with every mitzvah, with so many mitzvahs. We do it Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. We stand up Friday night. We make Kiddush. Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. What's that about? The answer is again, a weekly reminder to remember this important event. That we shouldn't forget this monumental incident. There shouldn't be an opening of the mouth. There shouldn't be an opportunity for someone to deny this. You buy a mezuzah for a few pounds, for cover of a pischa, and he puts it on his doorpost. By putting a mezuzah up, he is testifying to the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. That he knows what's going on and is involved intimately in our lives. The Gamba Nevua, etc., etc. Okay, so that is really a very beautiful, beautiful Ramban, which is an opportunity just to discuss some basics in Emunah of Bechira, how Bechira operates, that we have choice, and how HaKadosh Baruch Hu restricts himself, he pulls himself out of this world. The word Olam, a world, comes from the word He'elam, which means hidden. So that we can exercise our Bechira, so that we can, Emes Hashem, earn Olam Haba. That's really the Yesodus in Emunah. And that's really why Pesach is so critically important. There's so much emphasis on it. That we sit down and say the night, we tell the national story, that we put it, we wrap it on our arms and our heads, we put on a mezuzah on the door, everything is Zecher, it's Yesh Mitzrayim. We have a mitzvah in the morning and the evening to recall Mitzrayim, to remind us of, sort of, to make sure that we don't forget that one-off time, that one-off generation where HaKadosh Baruch Hu clearly demonstrated his, the fact that he created the world, that he knows what's going on in the world, and that he intervenes with Hashgacha Pratis. Okay, that's the end of the second offering. The third offering, Pesach Matzah Mara. Now, I don't know how it works in your homes, but I would imagine the following scenario is quite common in many homes. The first hour or two of Seder night is very busy. The kids are coming along with their notebooks and their little their drawings and their pictures, and the older boys are coming with their Lever Arch files, Divrei Torah and the Haggadah Part 1 and Divrei Torah Haggadah Part 2. And, you know, it's all going. Then at some point, you know, people start putting their foot on the gas a little bit and, you know, whipping through the Haggadah until we get to Rabban Gamliel HaYomer. When we get to Rabban Gamliel HaYomer, the father, the Baal HaSeder, whoever's leading the Seder, everyone come back. This is the most important part of the Seder. Pesach Matzah Mara. Now, there's something strange about the order of Pesach Matzah Mara. What order would you put it in? If you were the author of the Haggadah, what order would you put Pesach Matzah Mara in?
Mara first.
Mara first. Why?
Because you were saved.
Because chronologically, that's when it happened, right? So Lechaira, the Mara comes first chronologically, and then the Korban Pesach, and then the Matzah when they came out of Mitzrayim. But yet, we've got Pesach Matzah Mara. So, let me tell you an amazing story. Seder night is always a great time for stories. And Rabbi Roberts always used to say, Lo ha-medrash ikka el ha-maisa. The medrash is not the ikka, but the stories. So listen, this is a remarkable story, which I heard from the son of the person who was involved in this story. And it's a well-known story that many people were on this boat. For example, Rabbi Rabbi, for here from Eitz Chaim, his wife was on the boat. Chanuch Teller has written it up apparently as in one of his books. But I knew of the story. And interestingly enough, when my friend, the son of this fellow who was involved, he's been living in America for many years now. I've totally lost touch with him. But when he was here in London, I went to be Menachem Avil. And I had a mental note when I went in there that I must go and I must ask him about this story. And sure enough, as I walked in, he happened to just start telling the story. So I've heard it from him. Listen to, and I remember the time when the father passed away. His name was Dr. Max Glatt. When he passed away, the father, there was an obituary in the Telegraph. I remember I printed it off. I put it in my files and my Pesach file. And anyway, this is, I think there's a remarkable story. Dr. Max Glatt was born in Germany. And in the 1930s, he was training to be a doctor. 1930s in Germany was a difficult time. And as the 30s were progressing, he was finding it increasingly difficult to study. And he saw the writing on the wall that it was going to become very unlikely for him to flourish in Germany. So he decided to leave Germany, and he made his way to the United Kingdom, to England. He got to England, and only a few months later, or a short time later, war broke out. Now, any Germans who found themselves in England soon after they arrived, when the war broke out, they had the status of enemy aliens. which means they were German citizens in England. Because England and Germany were at war, they had a status called enemy aliens. Now, the British tried to deport many of them. And Dr. Max Glatt was one of the people they deported, and they deported them all the way down to Australia. So they put them on a ship, and he was deported. He was a single man at the time. And to make matters worse, they were only allowed one suitcase each. Now just imagine that. Imagine packing your life's material possessions in one suitcase. I see kids in school, in the girls' school, they come along for an overnight Shabbaton, with these suitcases. I say to the girls, like, what would have been if it was two nights? how many, would it double this thing? How does it work? Anyway, one suitcase. So what would you put in there already? You put in there some clothes, some food, some sfarim, your tefillin, some mementos from home, photos. Anyway, he had his one case. It was a long journey. And there was a lot of tension between the British officers and the people they were deporting, the German citizens. To the extent that after many weeks at sea, when they arrived, they were very close to Australia, there was some sort of altercation. And the British officers did something very cruel. They made the German citizens take their one suitcase and throw it overboard as some sort of punishment. Now, you can imagine Dr. Max Glatt was feeling very, very bitter. He'd escaped from Germany to England. He'd found some refuge in England, and then he was deported all the way to Australia. And the one, the suitcase, his life's possessions that he's going to take with him to Australia, now he's got to throw overboard. So he threw them overboard, he had no choice. And a few hours later, they docked in Australia, and they disembarked. And he made a new life for himself. After the war, he came back to England. He became a very famous doctor. He was an expert on alcoholism. And anyway, he lectured and he was a famous doctor. And one time in the 60s or 70s, he found himself in a lecturing at some sort of conference. And he was lecturing and he was also in the audience. At one point he was sitting in the audience and he was sitting behind two other doctors and he heard from their conversation that they were Germans. And he overheard one of them saying to the other one, "Tell me, where were you in the war?" So his ears pricked up. I'm curious to know. "Where were you in the war?" And the guy, and he obviously spoke fluent German, he was brought up there, he said to his fellow German doctor, he said, "I was in the Navy. And my job was to parole the Australian coast because the British used to deport, there was a line, a sort of a journey between Britain and Australia. And any British ship would make their way to Australia, we would try to bomb it, to blow it up." As one time, they were talking, and the German doctor in this conference said to him, he goes, "I'll tell you something interesting, one time it happened. One time we saw a British ship come, and we got ready to attack it. And all of a sudden, we saw these suitcases coming overboard. Very strange, didn't know what they were. So we sent our divers out to retrieve some of the suitcases to see what it was. We brought them onto our ship and we opened them up and we saw there was German literature there. So we realized that the British must have been deporting German citizens on this particular boat. So we waited for the boat to go to Australia, for the passengers to get off. And then on its return, as soon as it left Australia, we destroyed it. We waited. So the very thing which was the bitter, the sort of the salt in the wounds, turned out to be the thing which actually saved his life. Now, that sort of thing, you don't always get to see. And even when you do see it, often you only see it with hindsight. It turns out that the morrow is only, we only appreciate that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does ultimately is for our benefit after the fact. That's why it's Pesach, Matzah, Morrow in that order. We only appreciate once we're out of Egypt. At the time, it's very hard. The Gemara says, when you say the brach of Dianemis, in this world, you say Hatoiv HaMetiv on good news and Dianemis on bad news. But L'Asid Lava is all Hatoiv HaMetiv. But here in this world, we can't recognize that. So, the Mar at the time, it's bitter, but we only appreciate the Mar only after the fact. So, the fact that we went through this process in Mitzrayim, we went through what's called the Kur HaBarzel, this melting pot, that produced us, that created Klal Yisrael, that is only appreciated after the time. And therefore, later we can call it Pesach Matzah Mara, because the Mara, the time, we don't appreciate it. But only after the event we appreciate the Mara has a value, and then we can recognize it. Hence the order Pesach Matzah Mara. Okay, one final... Sorry? There's the name of the boat. Yeah, I was just thinking about that. There is a name of the boat. It slipped my mind. You'll Google it. I've got it around my father's name. I was thinking earlier today, I must remember the name of the boat. Yeah. It's okay. Right. One final offering for tonight. This is a very beautiful idea. I heard it from a shir from a Bezriel Rosenberg, the famous Magid shir in Gateshead. With an interesting kasha from Rav Matis Yo Solomon, of course, the Mashkiach in all the years in Gateshead and now of Lakewood. So we start off the Haggadah and we say, Holach ma'an yod yacholo avasonot b'Mitzrayim. This is the bread of affliction that our forefathers ate in the land of Mitzrayim, called Dichvin Yesei V'Yechol. Whoever is hungry should come and eat, called Disrich Yesei V'Yifsach. Hashta, Hochol, Lashon Bobad Yisrael, etc., etc. The Shulchan Aruch says, listen to this. The Shulchan Aruch says, Nichos Pesach in Simon Tof Ayin Tes, Sif Aleph. V'Noagu, the minhag is, Shebal Habayis Mevorech Birchas Hamozen. The Balabayis benches Birchas Hamozen Belel Pesach. Shenemar, as it says in the Pasuk in Mishlei, Tov Ayin Yevoirach. A person who's got a generous eye, he should bench. Therefore, the Balabayis on Lel Pesach should bench. Why? Says the Shulchan Aruch, for who mikri Tov Ayin, he's called a Tov Ayin. Shenemar kol dichvin yeseh v'yechol. He started off the Seder by saying, Halach ma'anya and kol dichvin yeseh v'yifsach. Whoever's out there hungry, come and join us. So therefore, he's a Tovayin, and the Pasuk says in Mishnah, Tovayin hu yivarech, therefore the Baal HaBayis should say Birchas HaMozen. That's the Halach in Hilchas Pesach. Now, and that's what you see nowadays, that the Baal HaSeder actually leads Birchas HaMozen. The difficulty is this, says the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchas Suda, in Hilchas Birchas HaMozen, in Simon Reish Aleph in Shulchan Aruch, in Eir Chaim, Gadol Mevarech, a regular Shabbos, a regular weekday, who benches? Gadol Mevarech, the greatest person there should bench. V'imrotz, litzin rishus, lekotzin Mevarech. But if he wants to give it to another person who's more junior, he's allowed to. Rishai. V'hani mili k'she'en shom oireach. That's if there's no guest there. Ele'im yeish shom oireach, if there is a guest there, then hu Mevarech. Then you offer the guest to bench, which is normal practice. You offer the bench to be mazat, to lead the zimun. Afirim balabais gadol menu, even if the balabais is greater than him, nonetheless, kadesh yivorech lebalabais, in order that he can bench the balabais. Seder. Now, asks Rav Matis Yoel Solomon a beautiful question. If he has got a guest there, what does the Shulchan Aruch say in Hilchas Birchas HaMozen? That you get the guest to bench. But why? If he has invited a guest, why don't we apply the same principle of Tov Ayin Yevorech? After all, he's invited a guest, he's opened up his home, he's got a guest. That's the reason why on Seder night, the Baal HaSeder, the Baal HaBayis should bench, because he says, he started off with Holach Ma'anya, called Dichvin Yeseh V'Yechol. So every time you've got a guest, the Baal HaBayis should also bench. Tov Ayin Yevorech, he's invited this guest. You hear the question? That's from Matsyo's question. What's the answer? This is what he answers. Beautiful answer. Rabbi Zviel Rosenberg, the well-known Magid Shir. Rosenbaum. I'm so sorry. I put Rosenberg here. It's Rosenbaum. Please change that. For those at home, I will change it, Mr. Hashem, in time. Rabbi Zviel Rosenbaum gives the famous, gives a beautiful answer. He quotes a Chasam Sofer in Drashas. The Chasam Sofer in Drashas says, How can we say Kol Dichvin Yeseh V'Yechol? How can you open up your home and say, whoever's hungry, come and eat? There might not be enough food. You know, you're standing up there on the streets and saying, whoever wants to come and join. Maybe there's not enough food. The point is, on Seder night, we reach such a lofty level that there'll be enough. We'll share whatever we've got. We'll give of our own food. We'll get by. That's a different level of Tov Ayin. For example, yeah, throughout the year, you've got five people, you've got family of five people, and so you've got 10 pieces of chicken. So you can invite five guests. That's the cheshbon that perhaps you would make. On Seder night, we're not saying that. called, anyone can come. And that's very meduyik in the Pasuk, because the Pasuk says in Mishle, when it says in Chof Beis, Pasuk Tes, the Pasuk says, Tov ayin hu yavoyrach, ki nosan milach meiladal, because he gave of his bread to the poor person, i.e. his sharing of his own bread, i.e. there's a different level. So throughout the year, when you invite someone, that's very nice of you, that's very generous, but it's not quite the level of Tov ayin. And therefore, let the oreach bench, let the guest bench. But on Seder night, there's just a different level. It's much more generous, it's much more giving, and therefore, only then do we invoke the posuk of Tov ayin hu yavoyrach, and we get the Bala Seder to actually make the bracha. And that really is the message of said in the last paragraph there. That is really the message of Pesach. We were slaves in Mitzrayim, excuse me, we had nothing, and we received everything from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That idea, that message, is reflected on the Seder night itself, where we aim, as it were, to reach that level of Tov ayin, where we recognize that whatever we have, whatever wealth, whatever brachos that we have, it comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's for us to share it with others. And with that zuchus, we say, Hash tohocho, l'shot na'abo ba'ar d'Yisrael. So there we have it, four ideas. The first idea is a gift called Yontif, that Chodesh Avav, the emphasis is to convey the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is showing his love for Klal Yisrael, that he's taking us out, and that's the key. But in addition to taking us out, he's doing so gift wrapped with a ribbon, b'chodesh ha'aviv, in a beautiful time where it's not too hot, not too cold, not too rainy, etc. We then went through the beautiful Ramban, discussing Yesodus and Emunah and Bechira, some beautiful ideas to talk about over Yom Tov, for Seder night and beyond. Pesach, Matzah, Morah, why that order? Because Morah, sometimes the difficult times which we endure are indeed blessings, and it's only after the fact we realize that, and therefore it's Pesach, Matzah, and Morah. B'shas Mais, it's hard to recognize it. And finally, the Halach Ma'anya, we ask the Kasha, why is it throughout the year that the Oreach benches, surely the Svara of why the Bala Seder benches should apply throughout the year? The answer is that the Tov ayin hu yavoyrach is a different level. Seder night is a different level. His generosity is much more, because it's he's giving of his own bread to the poor person, his sharing of his own, which really is that the idea of Halach Ma'anya. Have a very good night, and this channel will continue next week.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.